राधे राधे। ब्रज महोत्सव जैसा कि हम जानते हैं, तीन उत्सव धाराओं से संपन्न हो रहा है। जो ब्रज है और जो ब्रज था और जो संभावना है, उसका दर्शन, जिसको हम एग्जीबिशन के रूप में जान रहे हैं, ब्रज दर्शन की धारा, और जो हुआ और जो देखा उसका व्याख्यान, दृष्टस्य अनुव्याख्यानम, वह व्याख्यान धारा का उत्सव, उसकी इस सभा में हम आपका स्वागत करते हैं। आज साहित्य जो लीला धारा के ऊपर निर्भर करता है, साहित्यकार ने देखा क्या, उसने सुना क्या, उसने स्वाद क्या लिया, उसका अनुभव क्या है, और जब वो लीला धारा के माध्यम से मिला तो साहित्य बनता ही बनता है, प्रकट होता ही होता है, उसको रोका नहीं जा सकता, उसको रोका नहीं जा सकता। आज इस सत्र में हमारे साथ प्रोफेसर जॉन एस हॉली, प्यार से सब लोग इनको जैक जी कहते हैं, आए हैं, लंबी यात्राएं करके आए हैं, किंतु ये यात्रा खाली न्यूयॉर्क से और दिल्ली की यात्रा नहीं है। ये वास्तव में एक पश्चिम से और पूर्व की यात्रा है, और ये यात्रा आज की नहीं है। ये यात्रा शुरू होती है शायद 1970 के बाद से ही शुरू हो जाती है, और इस यात्रा में वर्तमान रूप से तो आप कोलंबिया विश्वविद्यालय में, जो बर्नार्ड कॉलेज है, वहाँ पर प्रोफेसर हैं, वहाँ का कोलंबिया का जो साउथ एशियन इंस्टीट्यूट है, उसके आप डायरेक्टर रहे हैं, और शायद अभी भी हैं, अभी नहीं, क्योंकि वहाँ पर विदेश में यदि उन संस्थाओं में यदि किसी लिखने पढ़ने वाले को अनुशासित करना हो तो उसको एक एडमिनिस्ट्रेटिव जॉब दे दिया जाता है, दंड देने के लिए। तो शायद दंड आप पा चुके हैं, आप मुक्त हो गए। उस यात्रा में जो शुरू हुई, जब ये कृष्ण के साथ खेले, जब कृष्ण के साथ वृंदावन में ये खेले और सपरिवार खेले, तो पुस्तक आई एट प्ले विथ कृष्ण, जो प्रिंसटन ने छापी। जब कृष्ण के साथ खेले तो राधा उदास हुई, बोले कि हमको क्यों, हमारी तरफ दृष्टि नहीं, तो डिवाइन कॉन्सर्ट, राधा द डिवाइन कॉन्सर्ट, एक प्रामाणिक अद्वितीय ग्रंथ जिसका संयोजन आपने किया, और भी विद्वान उसमें जुड़े हुए हैं। फिर बात यह आई कि जो परसों हम लोगों ने लीला देखी थी माखन चोरी की, कि क्या एक ऐसे सहृदय और श्रद्धावान ईसाई के लिए एक प्रश्न ये खड़ा हुआ था, क्योंकि इनके साथ रहने में एक बात तय है कि यदि रविवार की सुबह है तो न घर में मिलेंगे, न ऑफिस में मिलेंगे, चर्च में ज़रूर मिलेंगे, और ये बड़े गौरव की बात है और बहुत महत्वपूर्ण बात है। ये ऐसे व्यक्ति के मन में ये आया कि ये भगवान चोरी क्यों करता है, ये चोर जार लबार, ये चक्कर क्या है, और इस प्रश्न ने इनको एक भ्रमर में डाल दिया, और ये उससे भ्रमर घाट पे आ गए। जयसिंह घेरा जो भ्रमर घाट है, वहां पर ये सन 72 में फंस गए आके, ये चोर का चक्कर क्या है, और उस चक्कर में, उस भ्रमर में नाचते नाचते एक ऐसा माखन चोरी के ऊपर विश्वकोश प्रकट हुआ जिसका नाम है कृष्ण द बटर थीफ। उसका मौलिक रूप तो 2000 पृष्ठ का था, छपा है शायद 800 पृष्ठों में शायद। तो वो माखन चोरी के ऊपर बात हुई कि माखन चोरी स्थापत्य से लेके स्कल्पचर से लेके म्यूजिक से लेके परफॉर्मेंस से लेके लिटरेचर से लेके रिलीजन से लेके ये माखन चोरी का विस्तार कितना है, वो एक अद्वितीय बातें आगे बढ़ीं। फिर खेलते खेलते दृष्टि का विकास हुआ और वो दृष्टि दी इनको सूरदास जी ने, यद्यपि वो स्वयं द ब्लाइंड पोएट, द पोएट सिंगर एंड सेंट, उस ब्लाइंड ने इनको दृष्टि दी और दृष्टि विस्तारित हुई और सॉन्ग्स ऑफ द सेंट्स जिसमें गुरु नानक भी हैं, कबीर भी हैं, सगुण और निर्गुण जो दो धाराएं हमने आर्टिफिशियली बना रखी हैं, उनको दोनों को समेट के इन्होंने ग्रंथ लिखे। फिर थ्री भक्ति वॉइसेस बहुत महत्वपूर्ण ग्रंथ है और काफ़ी चर्चा में है। उसके बाद फिर वसुधा नारायण के साथ मिलकर लाइफ ऑफ हिंदुइज्म एक ग्रंथ आया जो एक प्रामाणिक ग्रंथ बन गया है बहुत अल्पकाल में ही विद्यार्थियों के लिए। और फंडामेंटलिज्म एंड जेंडर कि ये जो समस्या है इसके ऊपर भी आपने विस्तार से इसमें लिखा है। प्रोफेसर डेनिस हडसन की पुस्तक को संपादित करके कृष्ण मंडल के रूप में लाए और जिस सागर में अभी भी ये पड़े हुए हैं, भंवर में पड़े थे लेकिन अब भंवर से नदी इनको सागर तक ले गई और उस सागर का नाम है सूर सागर। तो वहीं से तैरते तैरते कुछ छपाक छपाक करते हुए कुछ छींटे मीटे उछले तो एक मेमोरी ऑफ लव सूरदास सिंग्स टू कृष्ण, एक बहुत ही सुंदर उन सूरदास के पदों का इन्होंने जो अंग्रेजी के माध्यम से आस्वादन किया वो एक वॉल्यूम ऑक्सफोर्ड से आया और जिसका भारतीय संस्करण आने ही वाला है शायद अगले साल माने 2010 में, वो जनवरी भी हो सकती है, देखा जाएगा। तो ये सब करते हुए ये यात्राएं चलीं। भक्ति मूवमेंट एक्सकेवेशंस इन मास्टर नैरेटिव जिस चीज में ये इस समय लगे हुए हैं और ब्रज प्रकल्प में ये एक विशेष फोकस है कि किस तरह से कल्चरल लैंडस्केप मूव करते हैं। तो भक्ति दक्षिण उपजी, कर्नाटक आई, गुजरात गई, फिर ये हुआ, फिर वो हुआ, वृंदावन आके नृत्य किया, फिर उसकी नैरेटिव कहीं हरिद्वार में प्रारंभ हुई। तो ये पूरा का पूरा पैन इंडियन जो कल्चरल लैंडस्केप है वो भक्ति कैसे उसमें यात्रा करती है वो एक विशाल कार्य इन्होंने अभी जिसमें ये डूबे हुए हैं वो कर रहे हैं। किंतु ब्रज प्रकल्प को जो इनके 40 वर्ष की जो एक अनूठी साधना है वो है कि सूर सागर का प्रोफेसर कैन ब्राइंड के साथ मिलके जो इन्होंने प्रामाणिक संस्करण तैयार किया उन प्रामाणिक पदों को अंग्रेजी में अनुदित करके लाएं। अनुवाद एक विलक्षण परंपरा, क्योंकि सूर और तुलसी वो उनकी मौलिक सृजनात्मक को कोई प्रश्न नहीं उठा सकता, किंतु जब उनको पढ़ेंगे आप तो भागवत के कितने श्लोक यूं की त्यों आके खड़े हो जाते हैं। सूर अपने तरीके से भागवत को अनुदित करके ब्रजभाषा में ला रहे थे, भाषांतरण हो रहा था उसकी आत्मा को दूसरी भाषा में लाना, क्योंकि सूर संस्कृत में नहीं लिख रहे थे, तुलसी भी संस्कृत में नहीं लिख रहे थे। सूर और तुलसी जो विद्वानों ने मीमांसाएं की हैं वो देखा है कि भागवत के ऊपर कितना वो आधारित है, कितना आधारित है। आज उससे एक कदम आगे बढ़ के सूरदास को आज विश्व मंच पे जिनको हिंदी और ब्रजभाषा जानने की सुविधा नहीं है उनको आज अंग्रेजी के माध्यम से और विश्व मंच, विश्व साहित्य मंच पे लाना और उसी मीटर में पकड़ के लाना मीट्रिकल ट्रांसलेशंस। तो वो भी जिस तरह से सूर ने, मुझे लगता है यदि अतिशयोक्ति मैं नहीं कर रहा हूँ, इफ सूर इवॉल्व द म्यूजिक एंड द रस एंड द मीनिंग ऑफ भागवत इन हिज पोएट्री, देन ही दिस जेंटलमैन इज चैलेंज्ड टू ब्रिंग सूर एंड एनहांस इट्स ब्यूटी इन टू इंग्लिश थ्रू इंग्लिश एंड जस्ट नॉट दोज मेट्रिकल ट्रांसलेशंस. वैन दिस वॉल्यूम विच ब्रज प्रकल्प होप्स टू ब्रिंग इन फ्रंट ऑफ द स्कॉलरली वर्ल्ड सून विल बी एन एनसाइक्लोपीडिया ऑन लिटरेचर रिलीजन एंड कल्चर ऑफ इंडिया. नथिंग शॉर्ट ऑफ दैट. एवरी सिंगल वर्ड हैज बीन एनोटेटेड थ्रू ए जर्नी ऑफ ऑल द स्कॉलरशिप अवेलेबल अप टू दैट टाइम. एंड दैट इज समथिंग विच विल चेरिश फॉर जेनरेशंस टू कम. आई एम सॉरी आई हैव टेकन ऑल योर टाइम. Now you simply say Radhe Radhe and the show is over. But you cannot be exempted like that. So Sagar Das Ji, Jack Holly. ये माखन चोर की बात है, ब्रिज की बात है, सब कुछ उल्टा पुल्टा हो जाएगा. आप इसमें भरोसा रखिए कि सब नियम कायदे तोड़ दिए जाएंगे. किंतु ब्रज महोत्सव का ये एक मर्यादा है कि हमारे अतिथियों को हम पूर्व में ही मर्यादा देके सम्मान करके और फिर बात को सुनते हैं. मौली कौशल जी,
श्रीवत्स जी, थैंक यू वेरी मच. आप लोगों ने यह शब्द अतिशयोक्ति सुना होगा. तो ये जितने अतिशयोक्ति आपने बताया था, मैं कितना कह सकता हूँ, कोई बात नहीं है. पर मैं वास्तव में कृतज्ञ हूँ. मैं आभारी हूँ कि यहाँ पर आया हूँ. और ये वास्तव में शर्माने की बात है कि मुझे अंग्रेज़ी में यह भाषण दे दूँगा. पर क्या करें, कुछ लोग तो हिंदुस्तान में जन्म हुए हैं और कुछ लोग बड़े दुर्भाग्य की बात से दूर जन्म हुए हैं. तो आप देखेंगे वे लोग एक प्रकार के क्या राक्षस शायन है, मुझे मालूम नहीं है, अजीब है कम से कम. तो मैं कोशिश करूँगा, इतना तो मैं कर सकता हूँ. आई डू वांट टू थैंक यू ऑल फॉर कमिंग एंड आई वांट टू थैंक द इंदिरा गांधी नेशनल सेंटर फॉर द आर्ट्स फॉर दिस इन्विटेशन विच इज़ क्वाइट अ रिमार्कबल वन टू मी. I'm afraid, of course, and I feel as if I'm standing under the influence of darkness in some way. Why darkness? Because inside, darkness has fallen with me. It's relatively light here, but you would be knowing that in New York it's quite dark at the moment, and my inner situation is rather dark. That's just the way. ज्वरासुर तो आप जानते होंगे ना, ज्वासुर, ज्वरासुर. तो उसके बड़े भाई जो हैं जेटलेगासुर, और वो बहुत खाचा है. इट्स रियली वेरी डिफिकल्ट पर्सन. ही हैंग्स पीपल अपसाइड डाउन. ही मेक्स देम बिलीव दैट इफ इट्स नाइट इट्स डे एंड इफ इट्स डे इट्स नाइट. सो आई एम जस्ट होपिंग दैट जो मुँह से निकलेगा वो शायद कुछ होगा. आई एम ग्रेटफुल टू यू श्रीवत्स जी. Many exaggerations here, but this is not an exaggeration. Insofar as I am able to stand here, it's because of Srivatsa's help for many years now. And not just the help of Srivatsji, but of many other people in this world, many of them Brajabasis. I'd like particularly to remember Krishna Chaitanya Bhatt, Dr. Krishna Chaitanya Bhatt, who spent many, many hours with me reading the Sur Sagar with me and teaching me how to read it, jo abhi swargi hai. And I'd like to mention Vidyut Aklojkar, who corrected many, many of my mistakes before Srivatsji got to them and then corrected them all over again. And to the many people who have watched over this long Surdas project with compassion and with interest and with forgiveness, I'm truly thankful. सूर सूर तुलसी शशि उड़गण केशव दास, अब के कवि खुद्योत सम जहाँ तहाँ प्रकट करत प्रकाश. In his preface to the Surdas story in the Chaurasi Vaishnavan Ki Varta, the Vallabhai theologian and hagiographer Hari Rai tells us that it all began just a little down the road from Delhi, where we are today. It was there, in a village called Sihi, Dilli ke pas char kosure mein, that Surdas was born, and was born blind. Gradually, he made his way from Dilli Pass toward Braj, as we are doing in imagination today. On the way, Sur began to sing, and he amassed quite a following as he sang his songs of praise for the deity and of lament for himself. But all that changed one day. I'm sure you know the story. All that changed one day when Vallabhacharya arrived in Braj, transmuting these songs of sadness into songs of joy, songs of Krishna's lila. And the rest, as they say, is history. Sur is remembered as a chela of Vallabhacharya, and the ocean of poems he is said to have composed, the Sur Sagar, is generally taken to be the greatest monument of Brijbhasha literature. All this, as I say, is very familiar. But today, I would ask you to think of Surdas in somewhat different terms. In your minds, see if you can transform this ocean into a river, a current, a great stream. See if you can make it become not Sur Sagar, but Sur Dhara. Ya shayad Sur Parampara ki dharaen kehna chahiye tha. I ask this not just because Srivatsji Goswami has chosen Dhara as the uniting motif for this Braj Mahotsav, but because, in fact, the Surdas we know comes to us historically less as an ocean than as a stream, or rather, let me say, three streams. As we will see, these streams sometimes flow together, but nonetheless, it's possible to see the integrity of each individual one. So, teen dharai. The first of these streams, or currents, is the Vallabhite one. That community's appreciation of and performance of Sur and his poetry. This is a specifically religious stream. Ritual, singing style, and theology serve as its banks. The second stream, by contrast, is a secular one. Here, Sur is remembered primarily as a literary figure, someone who could and did appear at court. And finally, there is a third stream. This is the stream we might call Sur's own stream, because it emerges as the poems we today identify as belonging to Sur's ocean, as these poems were generated, transmitted, and then collected over time. This is the stream we might call Sur's own, because it emerges, didn't I just read that to you? Yes. I think of it, this Sur's ocean then, not so much as an ocean, but as a river. A river that began small, in fact, began small in Sur's own time in the 16th century, and that grew and grew with time right down to the present day. I assure you, somewhere in India, right now, some Surdas is singing a song which will be contributed to this great river or stream of poetry that we know collectively as Sur's ocean. This third Surdhara begins to flow in the 16th century, as I say, where we have a collection of 239 poems of Surdas, but it surges ahead relentlessly until we come to the 19th century, when we have a collection of Sur's poetry that actually includes some 10,000 poems, which is twice as many poems as you would meet if you picked up the standard Nagari Pracharani Sabha edition of the Sur Sagar today. That can be found, if you're interested in taking a very nice trip, that can be found in the Government College at Datia. So here is a body of poetry that's so massive that you can scarcely see across it. But remember, when you survey this great mass of, the rus of poetry, it may look like an ocean, but actually what you're seeing is the mouth of a huge river that has flown together over time. And the source, well, we don't know exactly when the source is. There are no dates for Surdas, but it must have been in the 16th century, And the first manuscript that we have that bears the title Sursagar comes not from the beginning of that stream, not from the 16th century itself, but part of the way along the stream. The first evidence that we have, so far as I know, of Sursagar as a title comes in a manuscript which can be dated 1640 of the Common Era, so in the middle of the 17th century. That manuscript, which was written at Ghanora, probably the one that's near Banswara in western Rajasthan, contains about 800 buds. And as we've seen, many collections of poetry recording the Surdas signature then continued to expand this great stream after that. In that way, Sur's ocean is anything but a dead sea. This afternoon, I'd invite you to join me on an excursion down these three great rivers or currents or streams that we might call Surdas ki parampara ki teen dharaen. Now, I would forgive you, certainly, for being a little apprehensive about having a Pardesi in the boat, a foreigner, a Firangi, a Mlech. Jo hai, wo shayad church jante honge, na jane, ye theek hai ki nahi hai, par kam se kam wo Mlech hai. To, haan, savdhani ki baat to hai. Par ye to yaad rakhiye ki main bhi sawari hoon, aur aap sab log jaayenge, aur jo drishya, jo prakritik drishya aap dekh lenge, hum अपनी ही आंखों से ये देख लेंगे और आप जज करेंगे वो सुंदर है कि नहीं, कि लगता है कि हम ठीक रूप से आ गए हैं कि नहीं. I leave that up to you. So, shall we go? The first river that we must navigate to understand how we've inherited the Surdas we know and love, that river is the one provided for us by the Vallabh Sampradaya, the Pushti Marg. In fact, three times in the course of the Surdas ki Varta that's attributed to Gokulnath, who was, as you know, one of Vallabh's grandsons, three times in the course of the Surdas ki Varta, we hear Sur himself being called the Pushti Marg ko Jahaz. And of course, you know the body of water that he was navigating on with that boat of his. But the question we need to ask is whether this ocean, or this great river, ocean in the metaphor of the Chaurasi Vaishnavan Kivarta, whether it is actually a Pushtimargiya ocean or something a little different. Was Sur, in fact, are you ready for this heresy? Was Sur, in fact, a pupil of Vallabhacharya or not in a historical way? What I'm asking is whether in his own time he may have been at a rather different location, but in the course of time, the Vallabh Sampradaya so loved his poetry that they wanted to make Surdas one of their own and created for us then the stream which we take to be common knowledge today. They integrated him with the other poets that are included in the Ashtachap, which you know so well, starting with Paramanandas, and made him a poet who would be sung all the time in whatever Vallabhite Haveli you can find in any place in the world, including New York. So this was an act of great reverence that was paid to Surdasji by the Pushti Marg as it developed. But I think we can still ask and perhaps appreciate the force of that act of reverence that the Vallabh Sampradaya performed at that time. We can still ask whether there may actually have been a Surdas who preceded the Vallabh Sampradaya and who exceeded the Vallabh Sampradaya, whose force is rather larger so that he comes to stand for Braj Sahitya in a much more general way. Why do I say these things? As Srivatsji has just hinted, it's been more than a quarter of a century now. Baal to kafi safed ho gaye hain, par baal to hain kuch. Been more than a quarter of a century since I started searching for manuscripts of the Sursagar. Soon, as Srivatsji has said, I was working with Professor Ken Bryant of the University of British Columbia. We were looking for any dated manuscript in which the poems attributed to Surdasji could be found up to a certain point in time. In this, we were following the traces that had been left by many earlier scholars, great scholars, in fact, some of them who initiated the Khoj reports of the Nagari Pacharani Sabha back around the turn of the 20th century. And I'm thinking particularly of the great Mata Prasad Gupta, who in the middle of the 20th century, alas, his work was cut short by his own death, made the greatest attempt, I would say, to create a critical edition of the Súrsagar. There we were, two strange foreigners, quite far from the sources of this great Súrdhára, trying to deal with what we found. So what we did was we tried to make sure that of these old dated manuscripts, we saw, if at all possible, all of them. So if there was a citation from the Khoj reports of the Nagari Pracharani Sabha, I and later Ken would go to the place where that came from to see if actually there was a manuscript there. At least I asked. I can't say that I found all of them, but I certainly did try. And we felt that it was interesting. And we went beyond manuscripts that were called Súrsagar to those which were just anthologies, where poetry of Surdas might be hidden away without our knowing it. And one of the surprises was that at the very K.M. Hindi Institute, where Mataprasad Gupta had been teaching, I actually found quite a large collection of Surdas's poems in one of those anthologies. Part of my, you know, upadesh here would be, part of my lecture here would be, and would be, that it's on the basis of really looking at the enormous and enormously valuable trove of manuscripts which are preserved in India. It's on the basis of that that our historical knowledge of this cultural tradition actually comes to us. But it takes some time and effort to actually get out and see those manuscripts. The IGNCA and the National Manuscript Mission, and certainly the Catalogus Catalogorum, have tried to help us with this work, and it's a great thing that they have done so, but ultimately it rests upon the researcher, the jigyasu, to go out and try to find those manuscripts herself or himself. We felt, Ken and I, that our focus on early manuscripts made particular sense in the case of Súrdas. You would be knowing that in a number of manuscript traditions, what you get as a manuscript may depend upon an earlier manuscript, and that is here also true, so that a relatively recent manuscript may be a copy of a manuscript which is actually much older. But what we found in the case of the Súrsagar was actually quite different from that. It turned out that with only one exception among the 14 manuscripts that dated before about the year 1700, with only one exception, was there a clear transmission from one manuscript to the next. Instead, it seemed that what we were seeing were collections that were made here and there in various parts of North India, which were independent of one another. So this seemed to underscore the importance of looking at the dated manuscripts themselves, rather than relying upon some later manuscript, which, some would say, is a copy of some earlier one. That was what we did not find. And furthermore, it turned out that the oldest manuscripts, largely speaking, were the smaller manuscripts, and the later ones, as I've said, were the larger ones. So we felt that by moving back toward these older, smaller manuscripts, we were perhaps not getting to the poet himself, but at least getting to the first collections of work that circulated in the 16th century when the poet himself must have lived. Now, getting back to Vallabhacharya, if I may, for whom, by the way, I hold the greatest respect. Here is a great philosopher, and you were making reference to my church going, which was amusing to me. I try it, but I fail more often than I succeed. In the 16th century, there was a great theologian sitting in Geneva, as a matter of fact, by the name of John Calvin, who shared many of the philosophical and theological notions of Vallabhacharya. I can't explain it to you, but it's quite significant that one has a Vallabhacharya appearing in this early modern period. But back to Súrdas. If Súrdas ji was in fact Vallabhacharya's pupil, then perhaps Whitty would expect to find in his poetry some hints, some traces of the theology that Vallabha so elegantly laid out. Perhaps we would expect to find a theological term like nirodha, or perhaps avirbhava and tirobhava, or perhaps anugraha, or pushti itself. But I must tell you that for whatever reason, none of these terms, so far as I've been able to find out, none of these terms appears in the early poetry of the Súrsagar. So we have here, I think, a bit of a dilemma. Then there's a further problem. Two further problems. One has to do with Vallabhacharya himself. Why is he, why is his name, why is his person not mentioned in the poetry of Surdas? Many answers could be given to this question. Sur, after all, became a poet of Bhagavan Sri Krishna, so perhaps he didn't want to use the name of his guru in that context. But it is striking that he would have had a chance to do so, because Vallabh, of course, is a title for Krishna himself. A somewhat later moment in the tradition actually noticed this problem and created a poem well known to many of you, Bhroso Dridin Charananikero, which ends with a citation of Vallabh's name. I mean, in context, it refers to Krishna, but it's taken in the Charasi Vaishnavan Kivartha as referring to Vallabhacharya. Personally, I think this may be a response to the absence of the name of Vallabhacharya in the rest of the corpus. We find this poem, though it occurs right at the beginning of the Nagari Prasadani Sabha edition, we do not find this poem, in fact, in any non-Vallabhite collection of Sur's poetry that dates back very far in time. Yes, it's there in the Varta, of course, but it's not in the rest of the Sur Ki Dhara that was flowing in the 16th and 17th century. Then there's another problem. If one were to take seriously the meeting between Surdas ji and Vallabhacharya, one would expect to see the following organization of the poems which are found in the Súrsagar, and Srivats ji has already made mention of this. If one thinks in terms of this corpus as a corpus which depends in some crucial way on the Bhagavata Purana, then one would expect that perhaps early collectors of Surdas' poems would have recognized this fact and would have organized the poetry in such a way that it reflected in some clear way the structure of the Bhagavata Purana itself. Now, you would know, if you were a reader of the poetry of Surdas, that exactly this form of organization actually is made. It's called skandhatmak. You have the poetry of Surdas organized according to the 12 books of the Bhagavata Purana, and what's left over counts as Vinaya poetry, which is then categorized as coming first, because Surdas is said to have left behind this self-voiced Vinaya poetry, left it behind when he encountered Vallabhacharya. But, and here's the big but, if you turn to the old manuscripts of the Súrsagar, by which I mean those that occur in the 16th and 17th century, you will not find a single one that is organized according to this Bhagavata principle. No Skandhatmak manuscript can be dated back into the 17th century. So we have here a problem. Conscious of time, I don't want to, I think, take you into the details of this. I think we don't have time for it today. But let me say this. I think what happens in the Varta, and it's a very elegant moment in the history of the tradition, what happens in the Varta is that the author of the Varta, remembered as being Gokulnath, the author of the Varta notices this problem and tries to deal with it. What he wants to do then is to create a story for us in which we can see or feel the transformation of the Surdas that was, I believe, the Surdas of history, how he was translated into a poet who depended, as this theological view of him thought he should be dependent, upon the Bhagavata. In a very elegant passage, which your handout refers to in one place. Let's look at this handout for the first time. Jeto aap dekh lenge 420, Sadhan. On the second page of this handout, I think, no, sorry, we'll come back to the first. On the third page of this handout, you'll see what the author of the Varta tries to do to amend this situation. He takes this famous and beautiful poem that you see on the first page, Chakairi Chalicharana Sarovara Jahana Pema Biyogu, you would know this poem. He takes this poem, which must have been very famous in the day of the writer of the Varta, and tries to show, as a clever and I would say reverential commentator, how it is that this poem proves that Surdasji depends through Vallabhacharya on the Bhagavata Purana. If you look at the second to last line of this poem, you'll see in the critical edition, which is what you're seeing, the Ken Bryant's critical display of this poem. If you look at the second to last line on the first page, verse 7, where the poet has described, you know, you would know this poem, described the beauties of the Lila world of the Chakai and the Chakravak. He comes to the end and he says, Jahasri Sahita Sahaja Nita Krida Pranamata Suraj Dasa Abba Nasuhai Vishe Bhachila Rava Samudra Ki Aas. You hear that Samudra or Sagar, it's still there in metaphor. But the line I want to draw your attention to is the one, Jahasri Sahit Sahaja Nita Kridas Pranamata Suraj Dasa. In the version of this poem that is quoted in the Varta, you do not have the line in this form. Rather, it says something like Jaha Sri Sahasra. You know, if you write out the text, you should really read it so you don't get lost. What can I tell you? Let me see if I can find the line. Shri Sahasra Sahita Nita Kridata Pranamata Suraja Dasa. That's what the Varta says the line should be. But if you read the critical edition, which rests on these 14 old manuscripts that we have found, you will see that neither in the critical reading nor, in fact, in any of the manuscript variants, which are here on the second page, in none of them does the word Sahasra occur. This comes to be quite important, because on this word Sahasra, everything depends, as the writer of the Varta tries to make Surdas into a pupil of Vallabhacharya and therefore into a student of the Bhagavata Purana. He says that Sur is speaking this word, Sri Sahasra, I mean, I've forgotten it myself, Nitakridata, is saying that because he is hearing the Mangalacharan that Vallabhacharya recites as he comes to the beginning of the 10th book of his commentary on the Bhagavata, which reads, Namami Hirade Sheshe Lila Kshirabdi Shayanam Lakshmi Sahasra Lila Bhihi. Yes, did you hear that? Lakshmi Sahasra Lila Bhihi Sevyamanam Kalanidhim. I praise in my heart him who reclines on Shesha, on the milk ocean of play, the moon-like one who is served by a thousand blandishments of Shri. So in this phrase, the Sanskrit phrase, Lakshmi Sahasri Labhi Sevyamanam Kalanidhim, we are asked to hear what the poet Surdas then is going to transfer into this vernacular, this bhasha medium, through the phrase Shri Sahasra. But as we've seen in all of the old manuscripts, this term is actually absent. What you have instead is the term sahaj, you know, natural, easy, spontaneous, which is a very important term, of course, in the literature of this period, but it refers generally to what one would think of as the nirguna stream rather than the saguna stream. Now, one can understand how the word sahas, or rather sahaj, in performance might have been heard by a performer as sahas. And what is sahas? Sahas is sahasra. And there we get that form of the poem on which the commentator, that's to say the author of the Varta, relies. But in none of the old manuscripts, again, does the word sahasra occur. So what we see, I've tried to take you into a detail here. What we see, I think, is a theological commentator hearing a version of a Surdas poem and trying to make theological sense of it. I feel that the old manuscripts here give us the background for this story. I don't mean to demean this moment at all, the taking of this poet as a Vallabhite poet and as a commentator in his own way, as you were saying, Surdas, Surdasji, Deko, Srivatsji. on the Bhagavata. I don't mean to demean it at all. It was a creative theological act and a beautiful one. But I think it was, in fact, an act. And that the surdas that we have before the author of the Varta gets to him is actually a much wider poet, someone whom we meet in this rather larger collection of early surdas poems. So the first of the streams that I wanted to bring before you today is in fact a religious stream. It's the Vallabhite stream. There are other religious streams from this period as well. If we look at Hariram Vyas or Navaji, we find there actually also religious renderings of surdas. They too would be part of this religious stream of remembering sur, but actually neither of them associates surdas with Vallabhacharya, and I think for good reason. I think he stood as an independent poet, a great poet, a poet who was indeed remembered as sur, the first poet of the Brajbhasha literary family, but not yet a theological poet in the stricter sense, not yet a pupil of Vallabhacharya. So now you've heard the heresy from me. You're free to dismiss it or think about it in any way you would. I would just ask you to remember that while I think, historically speaking, that sur is larger than the Vallabh Sampradaya, I also appreciate the importance of this community's having treasured this poet so much that they wanted to make him their own. And I also want to thank the Vallabh Sampradaya for keeping the performance of surdas alive every single day since the moment in which his poems were first heard by members of that sampradaya until this day. But as you would know, today as then, the poems of surdas are sung in many more contexts than in the havelis of the Vallabh Sampradaya. Well, that's my first stream that I would bring to you, the religious way of remembering surdas, and specifically the Vallabhite take on that religious reality. The second stream that I would want to bring before you is quite different from the first. This I want to call a secular stream, and it's one that we don't hear very much about. If you turn to page 3 of your handout, I'm sorry, I'm so used to being in the classroom and giving people handouts, now I've given you a handout and you'll have to deal with it somehow. If you look on the third page, you'll see that when the great hagiographer again, Nabhadas, who's really interested in religious matters, comes to the figure of Surdasji in about 1600 of the Common Era, he remembers Surdas in a particular way. When he comes to Kabir, he remembers Kabir as a protester against the caste system. When he comes to Mirabai, he of course remembers something about Arana. When he comes to Surdas, he is not talking about caste. He's not talking about the great affections of the heart. He's talking about a poet. He says, this is in translation, I'm sorry, what poet, hearing the poem Sur has made, will not nod his head? And then he goes on to describe all of the alankaras and features of the language of this poet that would make him an object of emulation among other poets. So here we have, in about 1600, a religiously inclined author who, when he sees Surdas, wants to speak of him in a literary way, specifically. And if we move a little bit later in time, we can see how this sense of the poet as a literary figure continues to develop. This, I think, did I put this? Yes, I did put it on your handout. If you turn to page 4, you have the poet Bigharidas, an 18th century poet writing from Pratapgarh near Raibareli, about in the middle of the century. And I want to thank Alison Bush for calling my attention to this. Alison Bush, my treasured colleague at Columbia, who's very interested in what's been called Riti literature, the other great strand of Brajbhasha literature, and who argues that actually the bifurcation between Riti literature and Bhakti literature is, well, it shouldn't be a bifurcation, at least. They should be seen together. One of her favorite people is Bhikkhadidas, writing from Pratapgarh. If you look on page, whatever it is, page 4 of your handout, right at the top, you'll see in translation, alas, the Surdas that Bihari Das remembers. Sur, Keshav, Mandam, Bihari, Kalidas, Brahma. This is not the Kalidas you think it is. This is another Kalidas, Brijbhasha Kalidas. Chintamani, Matiram, Bhushan, they are reputed, Lilatar and so forth. And then Alam, Rahim, Raskhan, Raslin, Mubarak. Aren't they great, he says. And then he says, living in Braj, this is what Irfan Habib was talking about yesterday, to live in Braj, to be in Braj Mandal, that doesn't measure Brijbhasha, the language of Braj, which is actually much more wide-ranging. What is Brijbhasha? It's what's known by the words of poets such as these. In other words, the whole list that we've just been given. Now, this is a pretty amazing list. Look who's in this list. Oh, by the way, then comes a doha. Tulsi and Gung, especially. These two are master poets, he says. And we can get a sense that probably he saw them as master poets because they were more than Brijbhasha poets. Tulsi Das, of course, writing the Ramcharitmanas in Avati, but then preferring Brijbhasha for other kinds of poetry that he wanted to write. But look at the beginning of the list. Who is there? Sur, Keshav, right at the beginning of the list. So I think it's not accidental that he gives us Surdas at the head of this Brijbhasha family. Probably not just in terms of time, of his having been a poet of the first generation, but also in terms of eminence, of excellence. There's that Sur right at the beginning of the list. But it's a very complex and I would say secular list. Please note that Alam and Rahim and Raskhan are part of that list. You might wonder, where are the Sufi poets here? Be a good question. Have they been calculated as part of a different stream? Where is Kabir? Where is Dadu? Where is that whole stream? From the perspective of Bihari Das, probably they don't belong in this list as refined poets, but Sur does. And then let me give you just one more citation from this secular stream in which Sur for many, well, centuries really, was remembered. One more quotation from this secular stream, which we tend to have forgotten, I would say. This is one that I particularly like. It comes from the Afsane-e-Shaha, so the Tales of Kings, which was written by Muhammad Kabir, in the time of Jahangir, so the first quarter of the 17th century. Now, Muhammad Kabir is a person of Afghan descent who is trying to establish the fact that his own ancestors actually were greater rulers than the Mughal rulers. And how does he do this? How does he do this? He provides for us a scene at the court of Islam Shah, mid-16th century, where the poets are gathered. So it's a secular, a courtly scene. And let's just see who Muhammad Kabir wants to put in that setting. This is a translation that comes from the work of Simon Waitman and, alas, the recently departed Aditya Behl. Here is how the passage goes. Wherever he, that is to say Islam Shah, happened to be, he kept himself surrounded by accomplished scholars and poets. Kushat kiosks were set up, scented with kalyan, and provided with betel leaves. You get the sense of this courtly or secular ambience. Men like Mir Sayed Manjan, the author of the Madhumalati, so he actually tells you the name of the work, Manjan, Shah Muhammad Farmuli, and his younger brother Musan, Surdas, and many other learned scholars and poets, he would surely have included Srivatsji Goswami if he had been in that century, many other learned scholars and poets assembled there, and poems in Arabic, Persian and Hindavi were recited. Now here is an amazing passage. We have a sense of what languages really counted as literary languages there. Arabic, first of all, and then Persian. That one's for you, Adri. In fact, you work with both of these languages. And then, as maybe not such a poor third, Hindavi, one of our wonderful graduate students is here, Audrey Trusky. Hi, Audrey. Who works on translations between Persian, actually, and at the Mughal court, and Sanskrit particularly. But here we don't have Sanskrit mentioned at all. The Sanskrit of this passage is Arabic, and then Persian, and then Hindavi. And what's so interesting to me about this passage, as Muhammad Kabir calls up a past for us, is that of all these court names that one could readily recognize as being part of the Sufi/Muslim world, we hear one name that you would think doesn't belong there. What is that name? Surdas. What is he doing there? Is he remembered? Which stream is he being remembered as? Is he being remembered as a great Vaishnava poet? Is he remembered as a great Brijbhasha poet? We don't really know. And in fact, he's right there in the middle of the list, so maybe the person who's writing this list doesn't see him as being very different from the others. In any case, it certainly seems to me significant that if we're looking for a representative here of a culture that would add luster to the court of Islam Shah as remembered by this writer, he chooses the figure of Surdas. Whether you would call that secular or not, I'm not sure. It certainly was cross-religious, and it certainly was a courtly vision of this poet. So now I've tried to introduce you to two of the streams that constitute, I would say, the Surdas we remember today. The religious stream, maybe there are multiple streams there, and the courtly stream. And maybe there are multiple streams there too, but broadly speaking, those two. And then there's a third. And this third stream is the stream that I would call perhaps Sur's own stream. That's to say, a tradition which escapes either of these shorthand versions of who Surdas might have been. I don't want to take time to say too much about that stream today because our time is short. But let me say two things. First of all, I think it's very striking that the oldest manuscript that comes down to us, I want to say a little bit more about it in just a moment, the oldest manuscript that comes down to us is one that was written in Fatehpur, in Shekhavati, in the year 1582. Probably written for a relatively minor member of the Kachwaha family, correspondent with the family that is ruling in Amer. It's a very interesting thing that our oldest manuscript comes then from that region, actually, and not from the Braj region. You know, Brijbhasha was known, in fact, it wasn't even called Brijbhasha at that point. That's a term that Bhikhari Das gives to us. Bhasha, the Braj, which we're remembering, even in its sahityic forms, its literary forms, is rather wider than Brijmandal itself. One indication of that is where this manuscript actually comes from. It comes from Fatehpur in Shekhavati. Now, this manuscript, which should be in every important library in Delhi today, and I think, please make sure that your library has this book, okay? This manuscript has been produced for us in a facsimile edition, thanks to the work of Ken Bryant, who really was assiduous in trying to get to this manuscript, and the great work of Gopal Narayan Bahura, who was for many years the curator of the Pothikhana in Jaipur. Bahuraji and Ken worked together, thanks to a visit from Prince Charles, actually. They were able to bring this manuscript to light, to photograph it from the royal collection, and then to give us a facsimile, that's to say, a photo edition of this priceless manuscript of Surdas poems, dating to 1582. But let's take a look at what this manuscript is, actually. It, very luckily, is a combination of three earlier manuscripts. And we know this because the numbering changes. We have collection one, collection two, and then collection three. The first and third are dedicated entirely to Surdas. Someone thought this poet was so important in the year 1582 that they were withdrawing on two collections that had been made earlier exclusively of Surdas's poems. But in the middle, in between these two Surdas collections is another collection, all three of them brought together in this manuscript, is another collection where we have Surdas poems interspersed with poems from other poets. What are those poets? Any guesses? If you would guess Paramanandas, you would be correct. But would you want to put Surdas together with, let us say, Raidas or Namdev? That's what this author did. And more important than any other, Kabir. So here, our oldest manuscript of Surdas, Sur's own tradition, I want to say, our oldest manuscript of Surdas contains a compilation of three earlier manuscripts, must have been, independent numbering, and there's even duplication of poems. We knew the writer was copying something before his eyes. Three collections, of which one, the one in the middle, is so broad in its nature that it can put Surdas right next to the poetry of Kabir and his friends. And that's one point I'd like to make. The second point, and there's not time to explore it here, but you may have seen something rather strange and beautiful in the way in which Ken Bryant displays his critical edition of the Sursagar. He places his reconstructed reading in the middle of the page. And then, on the left-hand side, he gives you an example of a manuscript from a conservative, actually a Western tradition. These are manuscripts like one, for example, that was written in Burhanpur, in the southern Mughal court, when the Raja of Bikaner, Raja Suri Singh, was there. One of the scribes traveling with him wrote down a Sursagar, which we have as B2, Bikaner 2. And the date, I think, is 1624. That tends to be a rather more conservative tradition because it's being copied at court. By contrast to that, if you turn to the right-hand side of any of these editions, you will see an example of a manuscript that comes from the, let us say, central or eastern tradition. These manuscripts, one, for instance, was written in Mathura Kshetre, or one is written by a scribe who came from Gokul. These manuscripts tend to be rather more progressive or liberal. Here we have a performing tradition where the variants show not scribal errors primarily, but the kind of error that you could hear in performance. You know, the performer comes to a particular phrase, doesn't quite remember perhaps what was said in his hearing, and then gives us the equivalent instead. So inside Sur's own dhara, we have again more than one dhara. We could contrast these two, manuscripts that were kept for court and manuscripts that were part of a continuous performing tradition, such as we have actually, you know, when Shobha Mudgal sang last night, she's part of that tradition, and so are the Ras Lilas as well. So even within Sur's own dhara, I would say, you have a variety of rememberings of the poet that keep us nicely aware of the various contexts in which he has been remembered through the years. Srivatsji, I'm worried about time, but I'd like to go to perhaps two poems. You know, you've been with me on this long trip now. We've been seeing these three dharas as we've gone, and you're forming, I hope, a sort of mental picture of how Surdas came to us over time. But we haven't really talked about the poems as such, so before we leave the room, we should at least read, thank your lucky stars that I won't sing for you, read one or two of these poems. And the three that I've chosen for you to look at, maybe we'll have time to look at two of them, are poems that actually are about dharai. They're about currents, they're about streams, they're about rivers, so I thought they would be appropriate for this occasion. Let's take a look at the one that's listed as number 432, so it's on page 4 of your handout. And I'll take a little drink of water, all this talk about liquids and streams and so forth. I don't know if you're meeting this poem for the first time. Piya pada kamala ko makarand. Take a minute. Piya pada kamala ko makarand. Malina mati mano madhuba parahari. Vishaya rasamaya mand. Amrit hute amala atidreya. Rupa nija ananda. Paramasita jani sankara sirdhariyo tajachand. Jako sarapasayala nachahiye aru asura sura soband. Tihulo gani sugama surasari sudha sura suchand. Now, after hearing language like that, I hope you're feeling very sorry for the person who would try to translate such a thing into any other language, let's say English. Are you feeling sorry for me? Are you feeling sorry for me? I hope you are. What is one going to do with such a poem? Here's what I tried to do. From the lotus of those beloved feet, it is nectar to divert the bee of the mind of impure thoughts from the dulling liquor of the senses. It flows. What is the it? We don't yet know what the it is. It flows with less impurity than even ambrosia, the liquid of deathlessness. Its form is inner joy. Its cooling powers were known to Shiva, known by Shiva when he bore it on his head. Casting aside the moon and caring nothing for mountains or snakes or the duel where gods and anti-gods were bound. In all three worlds, says Sur, that river of the gods is immanent, immortal, and so free. One thing that we can ask about these poems is how they were meant to be heard or understood. Ken Bryant has made this point strongly, and I would join him in making it, that each poem is a kind of journey of discovery itself. When the first line is announced, it's the job of the listener to think, oh, what's going on here? How quickly can I catch on? And then the first line, turned out to be very important for the development of the rest of the poem. So, Piya Pada Kamala Ko Makarand. What's this about? Konsa Makarand? Now, I don't know when you personally caught on to what this makarand was, but certainly you would have gotten it by verse 4 when the name of Shiva is spoken. What is it that's falling on the head of Shiva? We have no question. It's the Ganga. And in fact, Surasati, as a word, appears in the last line, concluding or confirming your identification of the fact that this is in fact a poem to the Ganges. But at the end of every poem, of course, the refrain comes back in, and sometimes halfway through as well, or more often than that. So what was in the refrain? Piya Pada Kamala Ko Makarand, Ye Piya Pada Kamala Kya Hai? These, of course, are the feet of Vishnu. So, silently, though Vishnu's name is never mentioned in the poem, this Vaishnava poem gives us an evocation of the river Ganges, complete with a reference to Shiva. But if you get the inner meaning of the poem from the very first word, actually, you see, this is actually a Vaishnava poem. Not a Vaishnava poem that would make it a non-Shaiva poem, but still a Vaishnava poem. Just as for Vaishnavas, the Ganges herself actually emerges from the toes of the Lord Vishnu. This is a beautiful poem, which in its own way enacts the dharanas, let's call it, the streamness of this poet. He takes us along on the process as he goes. I asked you to feel sorry for the translator, and I hope you do, because it's very hard work. In that last line, just for instance, listen to the anupras here. Tihu logani sugama surasari sudha sura suchand. The poet's own name is placed right in this stream. Sudha Sura Suchand. Now the translator, if he's going to, suppose he may want to fiddle with this a little bit for the English reader, but it's at his cost, and I have fiddled with it by placing the poet's name outside, but I didn't know what else to do because the poet's name is, after all, Sur. And none of those other words is going to come along with him. So we've already lost something. But I wanted very much to get some sense of the quick, Surasati Sur, the quick movement of the river, the sound of it as we move along. But what are we going to do with that anupras? What are we going to do with that alliteration? If you fill that line with a bunch of S sounds in English, it's going to sound pretty bad. We just don't do that very much in English. It would sound like, static. Okay? So what can one do? Well, I don't know. I probably didn't do the best thing, but I took the word sudha, and what did I do? What did I do? Sudha sura suchand sura sari sugam. Ha, sugam. Sugama, I took as imminent, so that which is close, that which is easy of access, sugama, imminent. Sugama sudha, sudha. So sudha to amrita, that which is immortal. And I thought, well, okay, we'll try to put the imminent and the immortal together and get those two senses of what this river actually is. But, and maybe it will be heard a little bit like something in English that would correspond to what we have in the Hindi. So imminent, immortal, surasati sura suchand. And then for the suchand, I'm sorry, but I couldn't think of the right sort of im word that would work there as the third element. And also I thought this word suchand is so forceful. You know, having a will of her own, suchand. You know, this is a real democratic poem. She's acting out of her own agency here. So Chand, I just finally said so free and hoped that somehow the reader would get a sense that this poem in its sort of like Tihai-like ending ends with a real powerful blast about what this river is. I'm sure I failed, but at least I tried. And let me bring you one last poem. This one, we've had a poem to the Ganges. Let's take a look at a poem to the Yamunaji. This is we're skipping over one that's a different kind of river. This is the river of the Gopis poems, some other time. Poem 431 on the last page of your handout. This will be our last poem together. Kayandri keso ki pyari jaise hum par syama karat hain aisi kripa karhu tum nyari. Jamuna jasaki rasi chahon juga jamajethi jagaki mehtari. By the way, a fair amount of anupras there as well, huh? Jamuna jasaki rasi chahon juga jamajethi jagaki mehtari. Sur buro kabhu jini mano kaha kaho yeh prakriti hamari. Unusual in its brevity for the early Sursagar, actually. And I think that brevity is right. This is a very straightforward poem in which the poet is speaking perhaps through a gopi as she comes to the riverbank, but also, I would say, in his own voice. O Kalindi, whom Keshav loves, Keshav being, of course, Krishna, grant to me your own special favor, as the Dark One has already done. O Yamuna, treasure of glory in all four ages, Yama's elder sister, mother of the world, never be angry at what I may have done. My nature, says Sur, makes me as I am. I find it impossible to speak these words with you here today without thinking, in fact, of the Yamunaji, thinking of our current ecological crisis as manifest in the relationship between the place where each of us is sitting, or in my case, standing, between that place and the Braj that lies downstream. Here we are in Delhi. We drink, we bathe, we flush our toilets, we turn on the AC, we water our lawns, we use the electricity that some upriver dam provides, and downstream, I am told, in the dry season, not a single drop of water descends from that Mount Kalind that's mentioned in this poem, not a single drop, and makes its way to Vrindavan. Precious little is left by the time it gets there. The poor Jamuna is just a tiny rivulet in that season, and even in this season, she's not doing as well as she should be. Precious little gets there, and what does get there has already been used for something else. So there's one set of slights that we have cast at the Jamuna. But if you leave this Braj Mahotsav and go to Braj, you will see others as well. The massive construction boom that is transforming Vrindavan from a town with at least some hint of the forest that is enshrined in its name, the Van or Ban, transforming that town, that bit of a forest, into what? An urban jungle. What is Vrindavan becoming? I think it's quite clear. It's becoming a part of Delhi. It's becoming Greater Delhi. And as if all this were not enough, a road has now been laid between the beautiful old ghats on the banks of the Yamunaji, the beautiful ghats, and the river itself. And worst of all, I mean, this is the Kali Yuga. Worst of all, there's the bridge to nowhere, which is now being forced upon the river by the UP government like some unwelcome lover. O Kalindi, whom Keshav loves, how shall we respond to a fact like this? Shall we just say, as the poet does at the end, Kaha karo ye prakriti hamari? That's just the way our species is. We make a mess of whatever we do. Bas kaha karo ye prakriti hamari? No American has a right to stand in this room, really, and present this kind of challenge to Indians. The anti-ecological footprint of my country dwarfs anything that has been made in this country. So maybe we have to see this as some kind of common battle that we face because of Hamari Prakriti. It's a common challenge, I would say, that this great poet of Braj happens to put before us in this poem. How are we going to find refuge, actually, in the love of Keshav as this gopi presents it to us? How can we find the strength? How can we find the strength to restore the stream of life upon which the city of Delhi and all of India, and in fact, all of creation, depends? The poet, this great Braj Bhasha poet, brings us to the bank of the Yamuna, and here we stand with Yama, death, hovering in the wings. Can we somehow join hands and stop this destruction? With Sur in his humility, we simply can't turn away from this task. We have to take stock of what we've done and of what we are doing. And then what? Shall we just say, Ye prakriti hamari kaha karo? What shall we do? Maybe we should think about it in a slightly different mood. Maybe we should say, Ye prakriti hamari hai. Hana? To hum log kya karenge? Main to koi jawab nahi de sakta hun. Par Surdas ji ka prashn aapke samne kam se kam uthana chahta hun. Thank you.
So many kinds of oceans, oceans of stress and distress in which the whole of humanity is finding very difficult to float. But the hope is the stream back from the ocean of distress, which people like Sur and interpreters of Sur like Jack bring to fore, that if we take the stream back of understanding, there is a hope. And we saw the glimpse that his whole process of connecting the stream and the ocean and to the tickle, the bund, from bund to the stream and to the samund, his process of literary creativity is suchand, no problem. Imminent, immortality, free. But this stream of his creativity, as you just saw in this just two examples, never leaves the shore of Sur's Maryada. And that is amazing. And he calls it Sur as a stream, but I think Sur does not require a manuscript or 120,000 poems to establish his sagar. Every poem of Sur is a sagar. And you know who said that? Can you guess? His friend, whose poetry is clubbed in Fatehpur manuscript together with Sur. When Kabir read Sur, you know what he said? Samund samana bundame. And that's what Sur is. I just heard from outside that coffee is still 5 minutes away. So we have 5 minutes. If somebody wants to make a comment or anything to Professor Hawley, it is welcome. Before we move on to Charkula and to Gopi Geet and to Rasleela. Udgan Keshav Das.
Yeah. अन्य कवि खद्योत्सम इतुत करत प्रकाश
या
So this only I wanted to say.
Thank you.
No one is like Sur.
Yeah, he started with that line. You came a little late. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for reiterating it. And that's what it is. That's why Kabir said.
See, that's just right. In any Sur Das poem, we should go back to the refrain. And you've done it. Thank you very much. You've taken us back to the first line.
Thank you. Thank okay. you. Thank you.
I think that is what Sur is. When in you are that in that ocean, and when you are flowing in that stream in which Professor Holly took us so smoothly, although there are a lot of turbulations, you know, turbulations of Pushtimarg and its relation to Sur. But in the end, Sur gives us a very smooth journey, thanks to him. We are really grateful to you, sir, that in the middle of all this, you could travel from Colombia to here and be with us this evening. We are again very, very thankful and grateful to you. And with that, the coffee is calling us. The coffee call. And then the charkulas on the way. And from there we go to the Gopi Geet. The women of Braj will bring their raw songs. Be prepared. Be prepared. They are straight from the hearth and home. And after that, nearly 40 minutes of Gopi Geet, we will come back to our Ras Leela of Braj. And today is Chhadma Leela. Radhe, Radhe.